Welcome to West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. I am the Reverend Tracy Springberry, and it is my delight to serve this loving and kind congregation. Welcome to all of you who are online. Welcome to all of you who are watching recorded services. Welcome to all of you here. Everyone is welcome in our fellowship. And we begin this morning with a song from the choristers. Don will introduce it. Of you, open your minds, open your hearts, reach out your hands, and greet one another. So, we have a couple of announcements this week. I just wanted to let you all know that the main way we get information in this church is through the announcements that came in your Sunday bulletin. You have to kind of click, and then you see them all. And the other place is you get an e-blast every week. If you are new today, if you would like to get more information about our fellowship, you can fill out the form that's on the back of the seat, or there's some out in the foyer that you can fill out, and we can start getting information to you. At the bottom of the e-blast, you can also click on announcements, and you can get so much more information about many things. I'm learning that really a lot of people don't know what's happening in our congregation. So we are working on this as a project. The first one is Chalice Circles, which is our small group ministry where people can talk about the things that are really important to them based on the questions or based on the themes that we use, and really be listened to. And they are a great way to hear yourself, learn about others, and build community. And we need you to register for those by Wednesday. And if you go to the e-blast or the announcements, you can find the registration. The other thing is Death Cafe, which is not festive, but it is really important and really meaningful to talk about. We don't talk about it often, and it's important because it's something that we're all going to do and everyone we love is going to do. So at the Death Cafe, there's no set agendas, there's no themes, objectives. You just meet in small groups and talk about what's on your heart. There's going to be several Death Cafes and Aging Cafes over the next year, but the next one is going to be on September 30th, that's next weekend, at 2 p.m. So if you look at the announcements, you can register, and they would like you to register by tomorrow because there's cake and, you know, they need to have enough. So please do that. We will now have our chalice lighting. We light this chalice that all may know welcome. We light this chalice that all might be blessed, finding comfort and courage this day in all the days to come. We will now say our affirmation. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful and what is wondrous. Let us open our minds to learn what is true and what is mysterious. Let us open our hearts to love one another and our neighbors.
Good morning. My name is Scott Winters, and my pronouns are he and him, and I am serving as your lay leader this morning. It's really nice to see everybody here today. Our opening reading is by Starhawk. Community means strength. We are all longing to go home to some place we have never been, a place half remembered and half envisioned. We can only catch glimpses of it from time to time. Community. Somewhere there are people to whom we can speak with passion without having the words catch in our throats. Somewhere a circle of hands will open to receive us. Eyes will light up as we enter. Voices will celebrate with us whenever we come into our own power. Community means strength that joins our strengths to do the work that needs to be done. Arms to hold us when we falter. A circle of healing, a circle of friends, someplace where we can be free. Please join us in our opening hymn, number 407, in your gray hymnal.
We're gonna sit at the welcome table one of these days. Hallelujah.
So good morning. I have a story this morning. I think we're going to ask all the kids just to stay where they are this morning. They don't have a lot of room up here today. So the story I'm going to tell is one of my favorites. It's called The Rabbi's Gift. So once, long ago, there was a monastery that had fallen on very hard times. All of the branch houses had closed, and the big mother monastery house, which could hold dozens and dozens of monks, was down to 5 old men, all over the age of 70, who had become very set in their ways. There was Father Abbott. He spent hours in his office studying, and when he came out, he went on and on and on about what he'd learned. And then there was Father Thomas. He just prayed all day, and he chose mostly to eat his meals in silence. They rarely heard his voice. And then there was Brother Eldred. He was very irritable and grumpy, and he felt like everybody needed to do things just how he thought they should be done, and got very frustrated if people did not. And there was Brother John. He was quite fussy about everything, but he did all the cooking and cleaning. But, which was nice, it's true, but he got very upset if people didn't appreciate him all the time. And then there was Brother Philip. Who even knew about Brother Philip? He was always just slumping around, not doing anything. Well, Father Abbott was very sad about the impending death of the monastery that he had worked his whole life to support. He knew that there was a very wise rabbi from a neighboring town who often came up the mountain, up the hill where the monastery was, and there was a hut in the forest where he would go for sanctuary and retreat. And so the abbot decided to visit him there. And he went and he knocked, and the rabbi welcomed him in, and they chatted, and the abbot let him know what was on his heart. And the rabbi just shook his head. He said, "I know just what you mean. The spirit has gone out of the people. Hardly anyone comes to synagogue these days either." So they both just sat in silence and were sad and read the Talmud and prayed. And when it was time for the abbot to go, the rabbi said, "You know, I wish I could give you some advice. I wish I had something to tell you. But I did hear this small whisper in my prayers that one of you, 3, 5 brothers, is the Messiah, the one sent from God to save us." The abbot thought that was crazy. He went back to the monastery, and the brothers asked him what the rabbi had said, and he said, really, he had nothing for us. I mean, he had this crazy comment that maybe one of us was the Messiah. And they all laughed. But in the days and weeks and months that followed, they each began to think, if one of us was the Messiah, who would it be? Well, maybe Father Abbott, he was the obvious choice. He had worked so hard his whole life to care for the monastery and all of the brothers. But there was Brother Thomas. He was pretty holy. He just kind of exuded this spiritual energy. And Brother Eldred, well, he was annoying, it's true, but he did seem to actually know the right ways to do everything. And then there was a brother whose name is escaping me right now, the one who cooks, John. There's Brother John, and he took so much time, and everything was always sparkling in the part of the monastery where they lived, and the food was delicious. He was so hospitable to them all. And then Brother Philip. Well, you know what? Nobody really knew what he did. But if you needed help, he was always standing right there when you needed him. And so they began to treat each other with a lot more respect, a lot more reverence, a lot more care and love. And then each of them had even a more interesting thought. What if I'm the Messiah? And so they each needed to treat themselves with a little more respect and reverence. It so happened that the monastery was on the top of a beautiful hill that was forested, but if you were at the top where the building was, there was a gorgeous view. and people would like to come there and have picnics and walk in the forest, and a few brave ones even prayed in the decrepit chapel. And after a while, they noticed this kind of, this love and care that surrounded the brothers and just sort of emanated out, and they liked to come there more often, and they invited their friends, and their friends invited their friends. And after a while, some of the young men began to talk about them to the monks about their life there and what they did. And one asked to join, and then another, and another. And soon it was a flourishing monastery that spread love and care throughout the land. We can now sing our children to their classes. We stand up and put our hands across the aisle.
Well, I believe it might be raining outside. It's beautiful. I'm feeling very grateful for the rain today. And I'm not quite ready yet for it to be here full time, but a little bit here and there certainly helps. It's refreshing to see it. It's refreshing to breathe in the clean air. And I'm so grateful to live here in the Northwest to appreciate all the beauty that's here. And it's also lovely to hear such beautiful music from the choristers this morning. Thank you. You bring us so much joy. We so appreciate you. Love abounds among us and in our spirits, and there is so much for which we can be grateful. So I invite you right now just to take a couple moments to reflect on what you are feeling grateful for today. What comes up for you? How is gratitude living and present in your heart this morning? Watching the Swifts. Yes, they are here. As we transition now into our time of giving, I invite you to reflect on some words by Mother Teresa, who once shared, "Love cannot remain by itself. It has no meaning. Love has to be put into action, and that action into service. Whatever form we are, it is not how much we do, but how much we love, we put into the doing. A lifelong sharing of love with others." WOOF is here today because of this love and dedication. And our future depends on our continued dedication as well. Through your financial support and the gifts of your energy, your ideas, and your time, and your talents, we all benefit from your contributions to live a deeper and more meaningful and more connected life. May our gifts build and strengthen this beloved community of compassion and hospitality and belonging. Our hosts may now come forward. Thank you, everybody, for your generosity. And will you join me in our affirmation of gratitude and giving? Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others.
To belong, to be welcomed into a community, means that the community holds our joys and our sorrows, whatever they may be. We will now take a moment of silent reflection. And when the music begins, please come forward as you feel moved to do so and place a stone in the bowl of water. The water is the community of compassion that holds all sorrows. The water is the community of celebration that holds all joys.
Here we go.
Open my heart to all that I seek. Let me be part of the love you.
peace is this moment without judgment by Dorothy Hunt. Peace is this moment without thinking that it should be some other way, that you should feel some other thing, that your life should unfold according to your plans. Peace is this moment without judgment, this moment in the heart space where everything that is welcome. So try saying to yourself, may I meet this moment fully without judgment. May I meet it as a friend. Say to yourself, may I meet myself fully. May I meet myself as a friend. Say to yourself, may I meet this stranger, this person, this companion fully. May I meet them as a friend. The chorister is going to rise to offer us more music. And as they do, take whatever is in your mind and greet it as a friend.
Would I harbor you? Would I harbor you? Would I harbor you?
This reading is by Reverend Victoria Safford. When we talk about hospitality here, about radical hospitality that goes to the very root of who we are as a gathered religious community and what we're called to be, we mean that we will welcome not only each person, whoever they are, whatever their gifts, whatever their need, but each person in his own or her wholeness, his or her holiness, a holiness which may, in fact, in any moment, be full of holes and contradictions, full of fear and brokenness and doubts. Come in, we say, not just in the full flower of your thriving, but in your loneliness, confusion, anger, shame, despair, the unfinished, imperfect, holy wholeness of your being. Come in not only with all apparent accomplishments and strengths, but with those pesky vulnerabilities. These may, in fact, be revelations. They may be glimpses of whatever humanity we share. This house will hold them all, will hold us all.
The Rabbi's Gift is one of my favorite stories, and I read it as a story of radical hospitality and welcome. The monks of the story have settled into long habits of being together, profoundly used to each other, in a way that means they no longer really pay attention to one another, except to sometimes be irritated. And relationships can be this way. We settle into habits. We are routinely nice or routinely irritated, or typically both. Life rolls along with its usual joys and sorrows, and we forget to really see each other. Our theme this month is welcome. So I've been thinking a lot about welcome, what it means, and where it fits into our lives, and where it fits into our faith. Often by the word welcome, we just mean greeting someone in a friendly way. It can almost be a throwaway, something done routinely, without much thought or attention. We say, "It's nice to have you here." Shake their hand, give a hug, smile, hit elbows, whatever it is that we do. And it passes. We move back into habit, or sometimes forget the person entirely. At a deeper level, though, welcome means to acknowledge someone and make them know they are wanted. This can happen the first time we meet them, or the 100th time, or the 1,000th. And we all know these moments of welcome when someone says, "You are here. I see you. And I'm so glad that it's you." It's wonderful when this happens, the sense of warmth and belonging we get. My daughter plays softball, and usually on her teams, I am the very secondary parent. I don't live in the same town with the team. I don't drop her off or pick her up from practice, and I miss games a lot because they're often Sunday mornings. I'm so secondary that the coach and frequently the other parents don't acknowledge me. I usually think they don't quite know who I am or where I fit. But not her current coach. Every time he sees me, he looks right at me and just seems delighted that I have shown up on the scene. It sort of shocks me into myself. I become visible. The sidelines at those games are happy places. welcome and hospitality have also been essential values in my life. For most of my growing up, I did not feel welcome, not in my family and not in my school. My family was busy with many concerns, and at school I was shy, not athletic, and way too smart, all pretty serious liabilities in elementary school, at least in my school at that time. So I had a lot of difficulty fitting in. My elementary school librarian, Mrs. Hornfelt, did welcome me. She saw me, liked me, and listened to me. She offered me sanctuary. She harbored me. She talked to me about books, which was my great love, and was always suggesting new, wonderful things to read. She let me help her shelve books so I didn't have to go to recess, which always felt really awkward and embarrassing to me. I felt so important and cared for. I never wanted anyone to feel like I did as a young person, outside of things, feeling uncomfortable, not knowing how to belong. I have always wanted people to feel like Mrs. Hornfelt made me feel, seen, important, and cared for. I was in my 20s when I started attending a Unitarian Universalist congregation. It wasn't long before I was a leader, organizing family camps and midweek dinners for the whole community. I always tried to notice people on the edges and invite them in. What did they do? What were their passions? What brought them here? I introduced people to each other. I invited a group of quieter men into the kitchen, where they bonded and became great friends. Outside of church, I threw huge Easter parties and gingerbread house making parties, each year including more and more people, until one year I made 40 gingerbread houses just for the children. I offered welcome to many people over those years, but I was not perfect. Years later, my son told me something he'd learned from a young woman who'd been a child in and out of the congregation over those years. Her mother had always felt that my friends and I were the cool kids and felt excluded. And I was genuinely heartbroken to learn this. I liked this mom a lot. I couldn't remember clearly. Had I really not invited her in? Was I really a cool kid? It is possible, I suppose, any group of people who enjoy each other and doing things together can get so focused on one another that they just don't see the person right outside who just needs to belong, needs welcome, and so they do not invite them in. It's also likely I missed many other people. I always had someone I needed to find, some task I needed to accomplish. I must have hurried past people who needed welcome. I imagine, too, that there was those people who made me uncomfortable, people who were just not like me in some way I couldn't articulate, that just made social contact feel fraught. I had not done any anti-oppression, anti-racism training yet, so I didn't know how racism, classism, ableism, and all the other isms live in our unconscious. I didn't know how they had settled there after years of stereotypes and ideas about what's normal and what's good. Even in me, who was absolutely not racist, not classist, or ableist. I didn't know that my unconscious might express these messages, not overtly, but as discomfort, pauses, and unknowing how to be. I remember no examples, but I wouldn't, actually. Those things happen below the conscious, below consciousness, and that is the point. It wasn't until I learned to feel the pause, to feel that slight discomfort in my body and just acknowledge them, that I knew that it happened at all. I had to learn to lean past all those silent stereotypes, all that garbage in me that I'd picked up over the years unconsciously, and just offer real welcome, the real welcome my heart wanted to offer. So in those long ago days, I probably never even recognized those to whom I did not offer welcome. Instead, I would have flitted by, not in a way that made me feel like I was rejecting anyone, but just absolutely prioritizing something else. Now, this makes me sad. But it also motivates me to continue to learn to open my welcome wider and wider, to always know that I have blind spots, and to keep learning and leaning into welcome. The monks had to be woken up too. Only when the rabbi suggested that the Messiah was among them did they try harder to really see the men they'd spent so much of their lives with. They noticed the good more often and were able to forgive and work with what was challenging. They were able to offer respect and reverence. The monks were seeking the Messiah, the one who would save them all. That's not a religious story that most UUs tell, that there is a person who will save us from whatever it is we want to be saved from. However, UUs have a long history of believing that the innate nature of each person is good, or as some say, has a piece of divinity inside them. Our latest version of this idea is our conviction that each person is worthy and has dignity, a UU value stated both in our seven principles and in the new proposed seven values. What is true is each person is a unique bundle of gifts and struggle with gifts, and who also has struggles they challenge with, are challenged by, and who experiences life in a very particular way. We can't know how any one of those people may affect our lives. We can't know if our encounter will be meaningful or transformative. But when our attitude is welcome, anything is possible. The unknown stretches out before us. The monks begin by wondering if their fellow monks might be the Messiah, but then they each realize that they themselves could also be the Messiah. I imagine that was a pretty mind-blowing realization. If they were the Messiah, clearly they would need to love and respect themselves, stop taking themselves for granted, and stop years of self-flagellation for not being perfect or normal in some acceptable way. We're not doing enough. Each of them had to learn to welcome themselves, to acknowledge themselves with genuine kindness that was good and notice what was good and enjoyable about themselves, but also when they were not who they wanted to be, to accept themselves and forgive themselves and just do better next time if that's what they wanted. Imagine that. Just imagine that. If each of us treated ourselves with respect and absolute friendliness, if we welcomed ourselves as a friend. Or if we're not already, and most of us do treat ourselves worse than we would treat our friends. Not all of us, but many of us have that habit. Or if we aren't downright mean to ourselves, we don't accept and nurture our gifts and appreciate the wonder of who we are. I think it would be such a lighter existence if we just got to enjoy being ourselves and enjoy everyone else being themselves, and offer grace and forgiveness when we behave poorly and when other people behave poorly. When the rabbi suggested that one of the five monks could be the Messiah, they all shifted their attention to noticing what it could be that could make the others and themselves the ones able to save. They offered radical welcome, radical hospitality. All their loving kindness, friendliness, respect, and love radiated out. And that is literally what saved them. On the screen today are words from the clouds we filled out during Water Communion 2 weeks ago. If you were not here or forgot, those who were gathered were able to write a value they considered essential for human flourishing that might water the garden that is Wolf. I entered all the words into a program that created this word cloud. So the words that were repeated more and more often are the larger words. So it's easy to see what mattered to those who gathered that day. Not all of you filled out clouds, and so there's blank ones. And I was going to put them in the foyer before service, and I will after service. And there you can fill them out. And people who are online are welcome to email a value to me at minister@wolf.org. We want everyone who wants to do so to fill out a value to help inform the vision and mission process that we're working on this year. So this word cloud is likely to change, but there were enough people gathered that I think this is probably representative enough for Bao about the values that we hold here at Wharf. And as you can see, the largest words are kindness, compassion, and love, followed closely by justice, gratitude, community, and interdependence. If you've been around a while, you have heard this quote from Karen Armstrong, the prolific writer of religious history. She says, "Religion is not about accepting 20 impossible propositions before breakfast, but about doing things that change you. It is a moral aesthetic, an ethical alchemy. If you behave in a certain way, you will be transformed." Unitarian Universalism is a value-based covenantal faith. In other words, we hold central values that we work together to learn to live. Wolf holds central love, kindness, compassion, justice, community, and interdependence. We hold central that all of us are inherently worthy of care and respect, no matter who we are or how we are. And welcome, radical welcome, is a very important way that we practice these values, becoming more and more adept at them. This is the religious practice that transforms us. As religious writer Joan Chittister says, hospitality is simply love on the loose. Welcoming people and ourselves is something any person can do. We don't have to be a particular kind of person. We don't have to be an extrovert or somebody who just genuinely likes people. It really just has to do with what we choose to pay attention to. It is something that we learn. It's something that we practice. It's something that we get better at. And the promise is, on the other side, is love and care and compassion. This isn't necessarily easy. Anyone can do it, which doesn't make it easy. And especially not easy if it's not our true nature, or something that we have practiced in our lives. You probably don't see me this way, but I consider myself to be shy. And when I'm among people that I don't know, I can again feel myself cast to the outside, sort of unable to make my way in. If I am not blessed with the warm greetings of someone like my daughter's softball coach, who opens me up to an innate belonging, I have to consciously, with some work, step into a different stance toward the community of people. I have to make myself focus on others who look left out and welcome them in. I have to take attention off of what I'm feeling, which is back to that elementary school not belonging, and cast it firmly on to the other person. It takes energy. It takes confidence. And the truth is, I can't always do it, even after years of committed practice. this is just the scrambled mess of being human. Sometimes we can feel our hearts open effortlessly to another person, and other times we literally have to make ourselves do it. And other times we ignore, dismiss, stereotype, and harm others. We insist that we're right about things. We try to control situations. We feel terrible, like we have a headache or our mood is awful. And so we can't really notice other people very well. And we certainly, in those moods, can't offer any grace for anybody's challenges. Even so, though, we can commit to practice welcome. And if we make that commitment and do the practice, we will get better at it. We can greet each other warmly. We can let people know that they matter. We can lean past discomfort in those awkward, weird social situations where we don't know what to do and just be curious. We can notice people and pay attention to what glows in them. I have been saved so many times by someone's welcome. And none of us can ever know when our welcome saved someone else. And that's answering the call of love, which we will now rise and sing. Hospitality is simply love on the loose. So go forth and love. We extinguish this flame, but not the vision and compassion of our faith. May they still stay with you until we meet again.